From Test Takers, this is the Hashtag Prep Podcast, a podcast dedicated to helping you learn more about standardized testing and college admissions so that you can help your students navigate this important time with accurate and insightful information. So prepare to learn the secrets that will help your students gain clarity, reduce stress, and work smarter, not harder. This is the Hashtag Prep Podcast. Welcome back to another quick and easily digestible episode of Hashtag Prepped. In 10 minutes or less, we're going to be answering the burning questions that parents and students have regarding the SAT and standardized testing. And from the title of today's episode, you can see we're answering the important question of how many times should a student take an SAT? The SAT is offered about 7 times a year, spaced at almost every other month from March, May, June, August, October, November, December. So it's offered often, but how often should students be taking the test? My name is Nakin. Sitting across from me is my colleague Brian Corden, the senior director at Test Takers and the most popular teacher that we have. Any fun facts you'd like to share with the audience, you know, maybe survivor-related of sorts?
It's not quite so relevant to the SAT, my survivor experience. I was a very long time ago, probably at this point, just about before most of you were born, on the TV show Survivor. But more relevant to you, I do take the SAT every year. Every time it comes out, we got the March, the May, and the October SATs. And I've got a perfect score on every single one of those for the past 15 years. So I've got, if you throw in some PSATs in there, I've got a well of over 50 SATs that I've scored a perfect score on. So I'm a nerd. I like this stuff. It's my bag.
Infinity points scored by Brian Corden over here. How many times can you take the SAT? Probably not taking it an infinite number of times. Brian, any advice?
Generally speaking, you don't want to take the SAT when you're not prepared for it. It's kind of a silly thing to just to go in and burn an SAT just for the experience. You should really only be taking the test when you're prepped for it. So I wouldn't suggest taking one just to see how it feels. The fact is there are some measures in place for you to protect you. So one thing we'll talk about today is called score choice, which allows you to hide SAT scores, which kind of lets you say, well, then why not take it 100 times? Because can I just send my one or two best scores, you know, my higher math and my higher English? And in theory, that is possible. It just seems like a real waste of your time and money to do that. Psychologically speaking, I don't know if that's got the emotional intelligence I'm looking for in a college student to just be like, I'm gonna take this 100 times. It just seems a little frivolous and like you have no actual plan in place. So none of you were planning on taking it 100 times. We were thinking, can I take it 4 or 5 times? Even that's probably too many times. Most people will take the SAT 2 or 3 times. It's really rare, but spectacular when a kid can take the SAT once and be done. That's thrilling, that's wonderful, and I wish that for all of you. Realistically speaking, most people will take the SAT 2 or 3 times. Naka?
Well, compared to when parents took it, the SAT isn't this one-and-done deal where you have to put all your energy into one test, and that stresses students out. As Brian mentioned, we do have score choice and super scoring in place, and we'll talk about that near the end of the podcast, about how that kind of alleviates the stress and lets the students put their best foot forward. So to answer the question, how many times should you take the SAT? At least 2 to 3 times. College Board even recommends taking the test twice, because on average, 67% of students who take the test twice will score higher on their second time. So let's talk about what happens when you take the SAT a few times. How do colleges handle it?
All right, so what we're getting at this point is something called super scoring. And it's this idea that when you take the test multiple times, you're unlikely to score the exact same score on 2 different tests. So statistically speaking, one test is probably going to have a higher math score, and one test might have a higher English score. Again, if you're lucky, your high scores are on the same test, and then you only need to send one test. But for most students, you might have that little bit of random, you know, statistical difference between 2 SATs. So what you get to choose is which tests to send to schools. So before I get to super scoring, score choice. There are a lot of questions surrounding score choice and what it means. Just so you kind of have a sense, really, if I'm going to be cynical about it, this was College Board's way of making more money from registration fees. Because the more times you take the SAT, the more times you have to pay for a registration fee. So the more money that goes to College Board, which is still somehow a non-for-profit. But they brand it to you by saying, hey, you know, it's cool. You can take the SAT a ton of times. And no one needs to know what bad scores you have. You can send just your best scores. So you get to choose which scores get sent to colleges and which do not. It's all or nothing in terms of a single test, though. You can't say, can I just send my English from March and my math from May? No. You have to send the whole March or none of the March. So if you do have 2 tests where one subject is higher and a different test where the other subject is higher, you'll want to send those two tests and kind of hide the rest of your tests so that no one knows you took them. Now, what you might have heard is some colleges, quote, require you to send all of your scores. What does that really mean? Colleges have no legal authority over College Board. College Board is a completely private entity. It is totally separate from the colleges. Just because it's called College Board does not mean it's like the board of members of the colleges. It's just the name of the company, College Board. It's got nothing to do with private colleges whatsoever. So this is essentially like taking a test at the DMV and colleges being like, we demand to see the results of your driving test. Says who? They don't have any right to that. So what it is essentially is a bit of a scare tactic, because obviously colleges are extraordinarily competitive and want as much information on you as they can possibly get. So yeah, they don't super love it when you're like, yeah, I only took this one test and I got a 1570. Whereas they might be getting a bunch of scores of that nature. You know, they'd want to know like, okay, well, did you really get that on your first SAT or did you take that like 7 times? Because that will make a difference to them. So it ultimately becomes an ethical issue for you, and that's pretty murky because you don't really want to lie, particularly if you're signing something, which honestly all just goes back to the idea, just wait until you're ready and prepped to take the SAT. This goes back to my point about don't take the SAT willy-nilly just for funsies. You know, don't take it just to see how it feels. Don't take it 7 times because that's a waste of your time and money. But if you take it 3 times, those should represent your 3 best efforts. And if you are forced somehow by your own conscience or by what you believe to be litigation to send all 3 of those tests, at least they were your 3 best efforts. So that's score choice. And ultimately, it is a little ambiguous. But really, from where we're sitting, you only need to send your 2 best scores.
So let's say you take the SAT twice. What do colleges do when you send both scores to them?
So there's no one-size-fits-all policy for every college. You'll have to just check on a college's website or give a call to the admissions office to see what they do. But what many colleges do is called super scoring. So if you have a higher math on your March but a higher English on your May, for example, it's worth it for you to send both of those scores to colleges because most colleges will super score. So let's say you had a 600 English and a 700 math on the March test. But then that flips on the May, and you get 700 English, 600 math, right? So in both tests, you had a 1,300, but you had a 700 math once and a 700 English on another one. What many colleges do is create a super score, where they combine the 700 in math from the first, the 700 English from the second, add them together, and call your SAT score a 1,400, even though you're only ever actually scoring a 1,300 on a given SAT. So that's super scoring. Again, you have to send all or nothing. You can't just send one subset. You have to send the whole March and the whole May, and then colleges themselves will opt to look at your higher scores. However, some schools say we don't super score, but we do look at your higher math and your higher English. So I didn't really fully understand what they meant by that, so I called up a college at one point a couple years ago to get a little bit more clarification. And I gave the scenario I gave to you. You know, what if I have a 700 math and a 600 English and vice versa on the next test? And I said, okay, what would you consider my math score? And they said, 700. And I said, okay, well, what would you consider my English score? And they would say, 700. And I said, okay, but what do you consider my SAT score? And they said, 1,300. And I was like, so to be clear, you're saying I have a 700 math, a 700 English, and that is a 1,300. And they were like, that is correct. I was like, that's not how math works. But what that means is they're really just giving you credit for the higher math, credit for the higher English, but on any one sitting of an SAT, your high score is a 1,300. So if schools say they don't super score, but they do look at your highest math and highest English, that's what they mean. It's honestly kind of the same thing as super scoring. It's just that they're not calling it a 1,400, but you're still getting credit for the 700 math and the 700.
And fundamentally, why colleges are promoting super scoring and score choices so that they can promote the best statistics. So at the end of the day, it helps students, it helps colleges, but being able to promote, hey, we have a student with a 700 math, 700 English over a 1,300 score, it makes the college look more impressive as a result. So Brian, with all that said, is there a reason to be canceling your test after you take the SAT? What's a good enough reason to cancel an SAT?
Unless you literally fell asleep in the middle of the test and just like snotted onto your Scantron and just had to bubble in a bunch of random answers, stop canceling your SAT. Drives me crazy. I had a student from one of our schools, oh, this is probably 5 years ago, who emailed me right after the SAT, and she's like, oh my God, I did so bad. I did so bad on that test. I really think I should cancel. And I was like, don't cancel. What are you doing? She's like, well, there was this one reading passage. It was so hard. I really didn't understand any of it and had to guess in like the last five questions. And I said, look, if you think you did well, at least in math, this is worth keeping because you can super score it. And honestly, you don't know how you did truly. And more importantly, you don't know what the scoring table is going to look like. If that test truly was super hard, it might have a really lenient scoring table. And so your, you know, five random guesses might not be as costly as you think they are, especially in reading, where the scoring table is always the most lenient. So, of course, this student ends up not canceling her test. And what does she end up with? A freaking 1590. So it was insane for her to even consider canceling that SAT. Now, are, of course, there stories of people who wanted to cancel it, didn't cancel it, ended up doing really poorly on it? Yes, there are stories of every kind. Every single conceivable scenario you can imagine has happened. But for the most part, there's no point in canceling a test unless you know for certain that you literally fell asleep and didn't do half the test. That you should cancel. Otherwise, guys, score choice kind of lets you hide that score if it's as bad as you really think it is. So it's a little bit of a no-stake situation. And honestly, if it's a question and answer test, like March or May or October, even if you did terribly on it, it's worth getting the results so that you can review it with your teacher, someone from Test Takers, or anyone who can help you look over that test.
So Brian, a common situation that we find ourselves in are students who get these very high scores. Is it worth it to retake an SAT to get a perfect score if you already have like above a 1550?
Setting a bar of 1600 for yourself is a really unfair way to treat yourself because it is extraordinarily difficult to hit a 1600. Naka and I can do it because we are literally SAT teachers. This is our job. We've been doing it for a decade. So yeah, we can get a 1600 because first of all, we're college graduates. Second of all, we teach the SATs. This is our full-time job. We know the test extraordinarily well. The percentage of students who get a 1600 is so incredibly tiny that we sometimes overestimate because you hear about this one kid who got it, or you heard, you know, your cousin's neighbor's brother got it or whatever, right? So I don't think that it's fair to treat yourself to 1600 or bust. I really think that that's a questionable goal that you set that you have to hit. It's a great goal, but it's an unfair goal to say, if I don't hit it, I failed. So if you already have a 1550, and you're looking to raise that to get into one of the most competitive colleges in the country, and I'm talking the most competitive. So unless you're really looking to apply to something that's got an acceptance rate of like under 7%, I'm not sure you need to be busting your butt past 1550 here. Because the fact is, on some SATs, that's a matter of missing three questions on the entire test, particularly if you're missing a math or writing question where the scoring tables are harsher. And all it takes is one simple misread, one misunderstanding the question, one mistaking a comma for a semicolon, one mistake of math. So 1550, for all intents and purposes, is pretty much a perfect score. I don't think you need to bust your butt too much more past that, particularly not if it's going to be costing you time and money. But if you want to go to an LR and say, you know what, feels like if I just try it again, maybe I'll, you know, catch my car with some stakes this time, sure. But don't stress about it. A 1550 is kind of end game there.
And advice for other students who aren't going for the 1600s, who just want to get more points. At the end of the day, a thing I like to remind my students about, it's about seeing how far you've come along. It's good to have goals in life, but it's also more important to see how much time and energy and how much you've actually moved your score in that time. To wrap up this week of Hashtag Prep, we'll leave everybody with our Hashtag Prep pro tip, and that would be to register for two SATs. It works to your advantage. On average, 67% of testers who take the test a second time will score higher. And you have the advantage of super scoring, taking the best math and best English score to put your best foot forward for colleges. Sitting across from me is Brian Corden. My name is Naka, and this has been Hashtag Prepped.